She used to be a politician. Now she's keeping them honest. Danielle Smith on 770 CHQR.
Brought to you by the Popowich Carmeli Advisory Group, CIBC Wood Gundy.
All right, let me just give you a smattering of responses, because you know what? It doesn't matter what I think. It matters what you think about this. Brian says, Danielle, agree with Jay Hill. No doubt. One problem. If this party is successful, it puts the Liberals in power permanently. Another person says, I know it will be difficult, but I agree with your guest for the sake of future generations. Another one says, how refreshing that he's standing up for Alberta and what's being done to Canada. Another one says, Mr. Hill sounds like Preston Manning in 1987. This might be the first step, but it's not an unfamiliar journey. Another one says, in order to be ready for the next federal election, is there enough time for Wexit to be ready? Didn't sound like it, because I've been told that the pens and are already ordered for a September election. I don't know if that's true, but I think we have to be prepared that there's going to be a fall election. And we'll see. We'll keep up to date on their status and their ability to recruit candidates, but I wouldn't anticipate they'd be ready. Another one says, tell him I am for separation. What he has said about the East getting all the pandering is so true, with lots of O's. Another one, for me, it's either Aaron O'Toole wins or I am done paying any attention to this anymore and will vote Western separatist every time till I die. Another one, as logical as it sounds and as dismal as our future in Canada sounds, this makes me sad to hear. Another one says, I haven't heard so much truth for a long time. Another one, the West will always be one election away from ruin. Another person says, I'll vote for your guest. He's right on the mark. Another one, I will vote Wexit. And Mr. Harper would make an excellent leader if that's possible. Another one says, I have reached a point that I just don't care anymore. Tired of it all. And someone else here says, very sad to me, Danielle, that you don't realize that he's right. No matter who gets elected, it'll be the same sad story for Alberta. Just reality. Not we are left with no choice. But now we are left with no choice but Wexit. Okay, friends, here's what I will say. Let's see if we can end on agreement. Jay Hill joining this movement and leading this party, even in an interim way, gives it instant credibility, far more than Peter Downing had. And he stepped away to take on other activist roles. And the names that he mentioned, I don't know all of them. I recognize a few of them. They're real people, too, with real organizing skills and a real basis of influence. And so we've got to pay attention to it now, because it is all of a sudden a much more serious movement than it was 5 minutes ago. Okay. Let's continue on. I know we have this listener, Jason, who says, I just want some good news for a change. I got nothing for you today, Jason, because this next topic, when I had Joel Kotkin on before, I really enjoyed our conversation. This last article that he wrote, though, leaves me very unsettled. We've got big, big problems below the surface. Maybe they're not that far below the surface anymore. I want to walk you through his analysis, because I'm beginning to wonder if we've got maybe not as acute, but a similar problem manifesting and developing in Canada. He's written for The American Mind. The essay is called The Rebellion of America's New Underclass. And listen to what he says. He talks about the civic breakdown that occurred, but it goes beyond the brutal police killing of George Floyd, particularly in our core cities. He says, our dysfunction is a result of our increasingly large and increasingly multiracial class of neo-serfs. It's quite a term I've not heard it used before. I'm going to try to understand what it means today. He says, like its medieval counterpart, today's serf class consists of the permanently marginalized, like the peasants of feudal times. These people are unlikely to move to a higher station. That isn't what the dream of America or the dream of the West is supposed to be. So what's happened, and how do we get back to having more aspirational opportunity to enter the middle class? Joel Kotkin is the presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University and executive director of the Urban Reform Institute, and joins us now. Joel, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I was very unsettled reading your article because, you know, I have a millennial stepson, and I always think, okay, that your kids are going to do better than you did because you did better than your parents did. You're beginning to see some signs that that's not going to be the case. What makes you feel sort of gloomy for that generation?
Well, what I'm trying to point out is what the danger we have now, because essentially what's happened and by the way, it's not unique to the U.S. or Canada, it's in Australia, it's in Europe, is we now have a generation that's growing up who have been already pummeled once in the financial crisis, 2007-2008, been pummeled again, basically a little over a decade later, finding themselves with increasing inability to buy a house, start a business, build a decent career, and this class, is not confined to African Americans or immigrants. It we can see it in a lot of our Anglo communities, where many kids, even middle class kids, growing up knowing that they're probably never going to be much more than an Uber driver, renting, living with six roommates, or in other words, that the idea that your life will be even as nice as your parents' life, that is beginning to fade. And I think that if we don't confront this, we're going to see more of what we saw, not just the Floyd situation and the riots and then that have now occurred now in many many places now, and at the with the amazing acquiescence of some local officials, I have to say. But the most incredible part of this to me is that you now also have a large population of non-immigrants, non-minorities, who also aren't getting anywhere. And one expression of that may be kind of your Antifa and that kind of white hysterical person, hysterical one day about climate change and now about George Floyd and God knows about something else. And at the same time, and an equally dangerous, a group of young people who are completely alienated and have gone to the far right. Because, they're looking at a world in which they're being told, well, this company is going to hire based on race, and this university is going to do this based on race. And if you're a white person, even if your family, came to the United States in 1890 and had never seen a black person in their lives and lived in, some poor neighborhoods, those people are also being asked to essentially accept the guilt of a very small class of white Southerners who owned slaves, before 1865. So, what we're seeing is this is alienation. What it reminds me, scarily enough, is a situation in Weimar Germany in the late 20s, early 30s, and that's not a good precedent.
Let me pause because...
Breaking news now on Global News Radio, 770 CHQR.
Charges are expected to be dropped against a prominent Northern Alberta First Nations chief who was the subject of a violent arrest earlier this year. The case of Chief Alan Adam of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation is to be in front of a Fort McMurray provincial court judge today. And court records show charges of resisting arrest and assaulting a peace officer are withdrawn. The move comes after the RCMP dash cam footage of Adam's arrest was made public earlier this month. We will have more on this developing story as details become available. From the Global Newsroom, I'm Haley Jarmain.
All right, we're continuing our conversation on with Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University and Executive Director of the Urban Reform Institute. And you've just articulated why I was uneasy reading your column, because we're beginning to see, not only do we have this alienated and marginalized younger generation, but they're polarized in the same way that we've seen in the past. We've got the extreme right, extreme left, we've got fascists and anti-fascists. Communists, I guess, is sort of what they are, Marxists, cultural Marxists. And that is, and we also have the rioting that's taking place in our main cities. I think we have this expectation that police will get things under control and with some order, but it's not a given that that will happen. Maybe that's why I'm feeling so unsettled by it. How optimistic are you that we're going to be able to move past this period or versus having it escalate?
Well, I mean, I think it will probably escalate for a while. I mean, here in the United States, I think, the election will probably make it worse because of the you know, I think it's pretty inevitable now that Trump will lose. But I think that you know, there'll be ill feelings on both sides. You know, I hate to say what terrifies me is I was in Texas when Trump was elected, and I had meetings in Austin. I couldn't get to the meetings because there were already mass demonstrations blocking the crossing of the river into downtown Austin. So, you know, fundamentally what you have is a political system where, you know, and I think this may be carrying out in Canada, where people feel, well, if the other party wins, it's not just a little change of direction. It could be a threat to my way of life. If, let's say, Canada adopts like we have here in California, where we're basically going to get rid of fossil fuels. Okay, so what happens to Alberta?
It's so funny. You probably didn't hear my previous guest, but that's exactly what we were talking about, is a new movement that has started to separate from the rest of Canada because of that issue. So you're right. There is that polarization, too.
I guess, talk to people.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want a parallel. I talk to people in Texas, and let's just say President Biden, you know, on this second day of office, declares a climate emergency. I'm going to stop all fracking. Texas was an independent country before it could be again.
Well, here's, I guess this is
pretty ugly.
I can imagine. I've got somebody asking, you're the first guest I've had on who has asserted that you think Trump will lose. I've had guests who have sort of Republican-leaning and Democrat-leaning thinking that Biden has some serious troubles, especially trying to find a vice presidential candidate. Why do you think it's a certainty that Trump will lose now?
Okay, first of all, I think Trump, if you ask me in January, would Trump be reelected, I would say it was a 60-40, 50-50. Trump has never been popular. He's never gotten pretty much over 45% approval at any point in his presidency. And unfortunately, he has made no successful attempt to broaden his base. Then the only logic of his election is the economy, which was very strong. And not his fault, but the pandemic has kind of destroyed the economy and has hit many of his own core constituencies. So, you know, he had this great record, which is, you know, for the first time in decades, working class people were gaining income faster than wealthy people. I mean, it was really quite a good story. The pandemic's destroyed that. The pandemic has hit working class people much harder than professionals, you know, people like you and me who can do our jobs in our spare rooms, and so I think that and I think the Floyd riots, he just isn't very good in these situations, and I think, you know, the Democrats will win if they can just keep Biden in his bunker and away from the cameras as much as possible.
Well, let's talk about this, because that generation we began talking about, that millennial generation, they have very different expectations of what they want their government to do. So, and America really influences us here as well. So I want to walk through a little bit more about why that group is so alienated. And we'll continue our conversation with Joel Kotkin when we return on 770 CHQR. All right, guys. The American Mind is where I'm reading from this article about, it's called The Rebellion of America's New Underclass by Joel Kotkin. Just listen to some of these stats, because this is my great frustration with the continued lockdown, which we will talk about next, is it disproportionately hurts the young, disproportionately hurts those who are new arrivals, whether it's to Canada or the U.S., disproportionately hurts those who don't have a university degree or a white-collar job. You've got 40% of the people who've lost their jobs are making less than $40,000 a year. You've seen an unemployment rate with those who have a high school diploma only going up to 21.2%. Like, this is not the foundation for stability. So I think we need to be mindful that, I know I've got someone saying, oh, no, things are going to be fine. The economy is going to pop back to normal. I don't know if it will, but I think we need to look at what some of these undercurrents might be suggesting. So Joel Kotkin is the Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University and Executive Director of the Urban Reform Institute. And Joel, I guess I highlight those statistics because those are pretty shocking, but they're also a long time in the making. It's not just COVID that's created this problem, right?
Well, no, there's been a lot of issues. Globalization's been part of it. Automation's been part of it. I mean, some things were already happening anyway, but they're now happening more rapidly. But I think that there's definitely going to be, we're going to enter into a period, I think, of you know, that is going to be, you know, fairly difficult because, and the pandemic, the way it was handled, you know, and again, I'm not an epidemiologist. You'll never get me talking about what should or should not have happened. What I can talk about, because I don't have that background, but what I can say is that it has had a devastating effect, for instance, on inner cities. I think part of the issue that occurred with the Floyd situation was that there was pent-up energy. People, you know, can't go to school, can't work, can't do anything. All the local stores are closed. Well, it's not surprising that maybe people said, hey, you know, this is a good opportunity to let off some steam. And some parts of that same crowd will say, hey, it's a really good opportunity to go steal an iPhone. So I think that there's really going to be a serious issue here where we have, you know, a large part of this of the population, and it's true in Canada, it's true in most of countries, young people, minorities, immigrants have been hit hardest by this. Now, the question is, were there things we could have done differently? And I think one of the things that in my interviews I've done in the minority communities here in Southern California where I live is they could not understand why my shoe store on Cesar Chavez Boulevard had to be closed, but my customers could go to Target and buy shoes.
Exactly.
That, you know, so that other words, when we thought about essential, non-essential, maybe we could have said, here are the rules, and, you know, if you can meet these rules, you know, social distancing and masks, then you can open. Why, you know, what difference is it to me if you go into the Target or you go into the little store on Cesar Chavez?
Well, it's so interesting because you drew a connection that I probably should have thought through more, but I hadn't, is that an entrepreneurial path is a path for a lot of newcomers, whether it's a retail store or a restaurant, or even for young people to open up a gym or to drive Uber. So these offer opportunities for people who might not have a university degree and a desk job, and that's the area of the economy that was slammed down the hardest.
Right. Well, that's and I think this is why there is, you know, this is contributing to this angst, which I feel, you almost can feel it building among working class kids of any race, you know, young, and even some middle class kids beginning to say, you know, I want something different. Now, a minority will probably say, well, if we just got rid of immigrants and, you know, we had a totally nationalist economic policy, that would help. That will be one group. There'll be another group saying, what I really want is fully, as somebody wrote a book about this, fully automated communism. You know, in other words, we're going to use technology to create such a huge surplus that I won't have to work and I can spend my days, you know, taking interesting drugs and playing video games and watching my plants grow. I mean, you know, you have that view too. This idea of that you don't have to work hard, you don't have to do anything tough. You know, it doesn't pay off to work hard anymore. So, what I want to do is work as little as possible and get as many free things as possible. And that's where we're headed.
Wow, Joel Kotkin, thank you for helping us to be aware of some of these emerging trends, and we'll keep looking for them here as well. Thanks for your analysis today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Joel Kotkin wrote The Rebellion of America's New Underclass, and you can read it. He is executive director of the Urban Reform Institute. You can read that at The American Mind. Just, you know, guys, I've been worried about the millennials for many years now, just because of the confluence of factors. Going through university, graduating with a huge amount of student loan debt, coming out, not having the same career opportunities right off the bat, putting off marriage, putting off having kids, putting off buying a house, and then bang, you get hit with the financial crisis, and now you get hit with this again. I'm worried about this generation, and I think we should be mindful that it can have long-term consequences. Let's take a pause. We are going to be talking about whether the lockdown is still justified. Stay with us on 770 CHQR.
Thanks for listening to the Danielle Smith Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. And join the conversation. You can reach me on Twitter at @ABDanielleSmith or by email at Danielle@770CHQR.com. Talk to you next time.